Good morning. A lot of you guys know that I'm blessed. Kim and I are blessed to be building a house. And how's the house coming? Well, we're not in it yet. But we are blessed, and we're looking forward to moving into it. We're blessed to have a large yard. And there was a lot of dirt out there. And we decided to start working on the yard a couple weeks ago, and I was behind a verticutter. I spent a long time behind that verticutter, and Kim helped put some seed down. And one day, I know Kim got over 20,000 steps in, and I verticut again. We put a fertilizer down, and then we prayed for rain, and the rain came. We still don't have water out the house, so we were happy to get that rain. God sent the rain. For 4 days, we had a beautiful, light rain. And every time I turned on the wipers, I thank God. Every time I looked out the window, I thank God. This was a beautiful rain. And now I smile and I watch the grass grow. We have four children. We did the best we could in raising them. We dropped a lot of seed and we raised a lot of prayer. But God gave the increase. God filled in a lot of gaps, many gaps, large gaps, things that we couldn't do. We always prayed for our children, for the wisdom, for them to have wisdom, success, and their safety. And now that I have four sons in first responders, I continue to pray. I listen to sirens just a little different than I used to. Raising godly men, I think first of all we need to define the target, godly men, or maybe even men in general. You know, there's personal and preconceived ideas of what men used to be. Men don't eat quiche. Men don't cry, they don't wear gloves, they don't even think about using an umbrella. Men don't use straws. It's, you know, people have these ideas. But now it's a more popular question to ask, what is a woman? Especially in our world of sports. In our country, anyone or anything that wants to wear a dress can be a woman, and we've thrown in the towel on trying to define what a man is. Manhood is being stolen by society. David writes in Psalms 12, "Help, Lord, for the godly men have ceased." NIV says, "Help, Lord, for no one is faithful anymore. Those who are loyal have vanished from the human race." The godly men are gone. Where are they? And I'm sure that there are single Christian women that are asking the same thing. Where are the godly men? Now, to be a godly man, you don't need to be married. But it is required for you to be married as an elder or as a deacon. And the church continues to need strong leaders. God has called men to be leaders. Fathers, be examples of being a leader. And young men have that goal of being a leader. Many have preconceived ideas about what a godly man is. I know one time while I was at work, I shared a joke. You know, I'm full of jokes. And I shared a joke, and it was not at all inappropriate. One of my co-workers looked at me and said, "And you call yourself a Christian?" He has this idea that Christians are always serious, they're always sober, they're always concerned about something. Certainly we must be serious about serious things. But as we shine our light for others to glorify God, I can't see it very inviting to always be looking serious and concerned We are blessed. We're not burdened. Kyle and I spent some time in martial arts, and I've known two men that were very, very kind, very calm, very gentlemen, that were very trained in martial arts. But one of them quit working out with us because his wife said, Christian men don't fight. Well, we do have some scriptures that talk about not a brawler, not violent, turn the other cheek, blessed are the meek, blessed are the peacemakers, a soft answer turns away wrath. These are all important scriptures, and all scriptures are given by the inspiration of God, so we know that these are important scriptures and they're inspired by God. But a godly man is not stoic. He's not accepting of whatever happens. He's not unemotional, and he's not stone-faced. You know, Paul in his writings referred to the Grecian games an awful lot. In 1 Corinthians 9 and 24, he says, running a race, striving for a crown. A couple verses later in verse 26, he says, therefore I run thus not with uncertainty, thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. In Philippians 3 and 13, he says, reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. He writes a lot of things referring back to the Grecian games where I think people can refer to, and I'm not so sure that he may have not gone to watch some of these. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, it tells a lot of things that Paul endured: imprisonment, countless beatings, often near death, 5 times 40 lashes less one, 3 times beaten with a rod, 1 he was stoned, 3 times shipwrecked, 1 night and 1 day he was adrift at sea, on frequent journeys, in danger of rivers, robbers, danger of his own people, from Gentiles, in the city, in the wilderness, at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship, through many sleepless nights, a hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And in 2 Timothy 4 and 7, he says, I have fought the good fight, because Paul was a fighter. David, what did God say about David? I have found David, a son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. We know David as a fighter. David fought Goliath. And it's 1 Samuel 17, then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with the Philistine. And David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. After one of David's battles in 1 Samuel, the 18th chapter, the women sang and danced and said, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. David was a fighter. Elijah stood alone and challenged the prophets of Baal. Joshua was told to be strong and of good courage, be strong and very courageous. In Acts, the 5th chapter, where the apostles were told to, you guys, you need to stop teaching about Jesus. And Peter and the other apostles answered and said, you know, we ought to obey God rather than man. This sounds a little confrontational, doesn't it? And violent. A Christian man may not be confrontational, but he doesn't run away from confrontation. Godly man must be fighters. That's why we are issued armor. In Ephesians 6 and 10, finally, My brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to fight, to stand against the wiles of the devil. A couple of verses later in verse 12, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. We need to have that fighting spirit. And when we raise our sons, we need to plant those seeds of having a fighting spirit, doing what is right. Probably in 1974, 75, I don't know. I was in sixth grade and we had this open building. All the classes could see into the center of the building. It was a stupid design. Yeah, you know, people like me, you know, I get distracted by everything. You get to hear all the teachers and no, it's a wonder I ever got out of school. But the first day of school, we had a practice. Classes would take their turns of someone would walk out with the flag to the center of the building, and we'd say the Pledge of Allegiance, and we'd sing the national anthem. I don't think they do that anymore. But day one, I'm in sixth grade. Someone walks out, they have the flag, we say the Pledge of Allegiance. Mrs. Gordon gets on the piano and we sing the national anthem. Not everyone sang. Some of the boys, I'm not gonna sing. Well, you know, I grew up going to church and singing, you know. Well, so I sang. That was the day that everyone there met Mr. Burns for the first time. Mr. Burns was a Vietnam veteran. In a very commanding voice, he informed the entire school. In a very commanding voice, he let the whole school know how many friends and how many soldiers had died for our freedom, and you're too proud to sing the national anthem? It was significantly intimidating. The next day, everyone sang. Why was he so irritated that some showed little interest? What does a sixth grader know about war? Well, I'll tell you, that day we all learned something about war, the seriousness of it, the people that died, and how we need to appreciate this. We were expected to show respect and appreciation. Mr. Burns raised the bar for all of us. Raising the bar, having more, expecting more. A Christian man is not necessarily confrontational, but he doesn't run away from confrontation. We need to raise the bar for us to stand strong and stand firm for what we need to respect and what we need to appreciate and how we need to encourage one another. Paul in 1 Corinthians 15th chapter verse 9 says, I am the least of the apostles who am not worthy to be called an apostle, but this did not stop him from confronting Peter, did it? In Galatians 2 and 11, now when Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was to blame. Peter was one of the most noted apostles. He's very outspoken, very impulsive. And do you think Paul was at all intimidated to confront him? Peter, you're to blame. I think there may have been some intimidation here. Peter had seniority. It took courage, but Paul stood for what was right. Matthew 10 and 28, do not fear those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both the soul and the body in hell. Get your priorities straight of who you're following, who you're trying to please, and don't be intimidated. You're going to face confrontation. Being a Christian doesn't mean that you're going to get along with everyone. There's going to be confrontations. How many, I'll date myself, how many people here knew C.R. Turner? Knew C.R. Turner? Yeah. I'm not going to do fractions, but there's not a whole lot of you. I understand C.R. Turner to have said, it is not a compliment to hear at a man's funeral that he's never had an enemy. And I can see him saying that. When you're a Christian, you're going to have situations that are confrontational. Teach your sons to be assertive, not necessarily aggressive, but assertive. You can be respectful and forward without being hostile. Teach your sons to have conversations with others, looking them in the eyes. Teach them how to greet one another and other men in a respectable way. Treat others in an appropriate way. Paul tells Timothy how to respectfully treat others in 1 Timothy 5 and 5. Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters with all purity. Teach your sons to communicate. Teach them to, and I've seen this. Now you're talking, you need to look them in the eyes. Shake his hand and give him a firm handshake. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Okay, you don't need to kiss me. But know how to communicate and encourage one another. How old should a young man be before he realizes the importance of life? Well, I tell you what, in sixth grade, I learned something. I grew a little bit right then. How old was Jesus when they found him in the temple? He was 12 years old. After 3 days, his parents had found him in the temple, sitting among teachers, listening to them and asking questions. But this is Jesus. This is the Son of God. 12 years old, you can't expect that. How long was he missing before they realized it? But supposing him to have been with the company, they went a day's journey and sought him among their relatives and acquaintances. Joseph may have thought Jesus was with Mary. Mary may have thought that Jesus was with Joseph. But there had to have been some level of maturity of Jesus for them not to be concerned until the end of the day. How old was Joseph when Jacob sent him to check on his brothers? 17. And Israel sent Joseph to check on his brothers in Shechem in Genesis 37. He sent him out from the valley of Hebron to Shechem. That's 50 miles. His brothers weren't there. Where were they? They were in Dothan, another 15 miles away. At 17, he was sent on a 65-mile trip to check on his brothers. I read on a parenting website, while many 17-year-olds are looking forward to their future beyond high school, others might feel apprehensive about entering the adult world. Compare this to Joseph. At the age 17, he was already a shepherd. He already had responsibilities. He was sent on a 65-mile trip to check on his brothers. His father trusted him to be responsible and wise enough to travel. And we know after this trip, he really faced some adult situations being sold. Don't be afraid to raise the bar. In 1 Corinthians 13:11, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. And there is a time to put away childish things, and it may come a lot sooner than when we want to acknowledge it. Challenge yourself, challenge your family, challenge your sons. Raise the bar. We shouldn't set unreasonable expectations in raising our children. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Don't be overbearing or unreasonably strict, because this is going to encourage rebelliousness. But we should, my opinion, we should expect more than what we're seeing in the world and in the church. Things are certainly different than when I was a child, when we walked barefoot 20 miles in the snow to get to church. But I do think we can raise the bar. Prepare them for the world. 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits, and we know this to be true. But there is a balance between protecting and preparing. In 1 Corinthians 5:9, Paul writes, I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexual and immoral people. Yet I certainly did not mean with sexually immoral people of the world or with the covetous or extortioners or idolaters. Since then you would need to go out of the world. We are in the world. We're surrounded with people from the world. We cannot avoid the world, but the world is a dangerous place. We need to understand raising our children. We can't just send them to school and think they're not going to be confronted or tempted. The world is a dangerous place. Now, none of us would allow our children to go play in the streets, because the streets can be very dangerous. But there comes a time when we have to cross the street. Teach your children to cross the street safely. Protect and prepare. Set standards for what's in your home. Set standards for the character that your children's friends are. And don't underestimate the strength of your children. Excuse me, don't overestimate the strength of your children. Don't just toss them out there and see if they can fly. We have the idea, or excuse me, we need to have the idea of protection, providing, and preparing. Barna Group, I never heard of it, maybe some of you have, is a Christian research organization that provides data and insight on the trends affecting faith, culture, and ministering today. They report that nearly 70% of Christian students drift from their faith in college. 70%. I don't know how many people have sent their kids to college. They were Christians when they left home. You see a lot of things in college. I'm not anti-college. I went to college when I was in my 30s, though. I have a 2-year degree that John Lee tells me I hide very well. It would be inappropriate for me to share some of the comments that I've heard from professors. Even with no women here, It would be inappropriate for me to publicly share some of the things that I've heard in college and seen happen. And if I were younger, that would have affected me. It was amazing at 30 years old watching some of the things and watching how the younger people were affected. All of my children have had secondary education, but know what you're getting into when you send your children to college. Matthew 5:16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Well, where are these men? Where are these men that are going to see you? Where do they come from? They're going to be in the world. So we need to let our light shine where? In the world. So we're going to be in the world, but protect your children. Prepare your children for the world. Matthew 10:16, Jesus tells the apostles, behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And this is great, great advice that Jesus is giving. He's giving this to grown men. When raising children, don't allow unnecessary vulnerable situations. Teach them how dangerous the streets are and teach them how to cross it safely. Teach them to seek wisdom and to be watchful. Fathers are to discipline their children, training your sons to obey rules. Rick, I'm kind of getting into your territory here. What's the goal? The goal is all about training. It's not about revenge. You embarrassed me. Punish him. You irritated me. I punish him. If you enjoy punishing and like to show your power, you have a problem. The discipline is to teach what is right. You know, it's amazing that I run into adults that don't know what's right. They literally do not know what is right. Some children have never been taught. Some parents don't care. Some parents don't know. Just do whatever feels right. Well, you can't trust your feelings. Emotions are a strong part of our lives. They can be your gauge, but not your guide. Your children need a foundation of what's right and wrong. And discipline to lead to this self-discipline in their own lives. They know what's right. They know they're tempted. They have a foundation to go back to, and they have the help of the Lord to do what's right. Hebrews 12:11. Now, no chastising seems to be joyful at the present, but painful. Painful. I don't get these people that I'm going to gently raise my children. I'm going to console them. I remember I was in a grocery store one time, and I'll never forget Barbara. I've never seen Barbara. I don't know what Barbara looks like. But I know they were in the next aisle, and the father says, Barbara, get off the cart. Barbara, I told you to get off the cart. Barbara, will you please get off the cart? Barbara, when are you going to get off that cart? My father, you know him. He's not the smartest. He can't count to three. It would have been Barbara one time, and that's it. Now, no chastising seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, after it yields a peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. I raised my kids, especially my sons. Everything you do wrong is going to cause pain. And it's my job to teach you that. Everything you do wrong will cause pain somehow. Financially, it'll cost you. Emotionally, it will hurt you, haunt you. Physically, it'll hurt you. Pain is the result of wrong. In this parking lot behind us, many years ago, my sons were in the truck fighting over an electronic toy, and I was trying to get their attention. They all ignored me. Once I got a hold of that toy, I heaved it across the parking lot, and it hit that big tree that's still over there, and it went into a lot of pieces. Do you have any idea what that cost? I don't know, but I know I was being ignored. If parents don't stress discipline, a child may experience eternal pain. Everything you do wrong will cause you pain, and it's my job to teach you that. Financially, emotionally, physically, if you don't learn that, then you'll probably be experiencing eternal pain. Do not withhold a correction from a child. In Proverbs 30:23, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. If you beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. There may be some of us here that need to heave those electronics. Anything that gets in the way of our responsibility, anything that gets in the way of us serving God, spending time with our family, or catering to the needs of our wives, teach your sons to be responsible. Win their hearts. This is one thing that Kim really pushed when we were raising kids. Win their hearts. Prove your love. Prove you want what's best for them. If you win their hearts, they will obey you not because they have to, but because they want to. And isn't this what the Lord does? Doesn't God want to win our hearts to where we're serving him because we want to? In Mark 12:30, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. Psalms 119:9, how can a young man cleanse his ways? By taking heed according to your word. With my whole heart I have sought you. Oh, let me not wander from your commandments. Your word I have hidden in my heart, that I might not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your statutes. Now this is the idea of a heart that's won. Having a desire to be godly. It's what you desire, it's your goal, it's what you think about. Psalms 1:2, his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. Be involved with your children. Be involved with your sons. One thing that was observed during the COVID pandemic was fathers spent more time at home. And relationships grew closer because of dad being home. It has been said we will have better sons when we have better fathers. In 1 Timothy 4:16, take heed unto thyself and to the doctrine, continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and those that hear thee. And I believe the order of this is very important. Take heed unto thyself and to the doctrine. Take heed unto yourself so nothing will distract from you sharing the doctrine. I pulled up to this building. I climbed out of the car. And while others are watching, I'm walking backwards, dragging a leg. There's something wrong with that guy. Well, the building was a hospital. I was dealing with a kidney stone, and it was piercing for me to lift that leg. The only way I could get in there was to walk backwards. Don't you think I looked a little foolish, though? Something's wrong with that guy. If your son chooses to walk backwards for no reason, what's your response going to be? There's something wrong with that guy. Why are you doing this? Is there a reason that you're doing this? There's nothing wrong with that other than there's something wrong with that guy. Because I love you, I'm going to tell you that this is odd. Take heed unto yourself. Fathers, be assertive in raising your children, and if they dress strangely, tell them. Work with them. If they're blunt in their speech, hey, you don't need to say things like that. I know of a brother that he was young and spent a lot of time at bus stops. Hey, buddy, you need to pull your pants up. Was he wrong? I don't think so. It may have caused a lot of trouble there. You don't need to be blunt, even if it's true. Intentionally annoying others, there are times you need to pull your son aside, and I've done it with my sons. Hey, I don't want to embarrass you. I love you. That's why I'm telling you this. Don't do this. I don't want others to mock you, and I really don't want others to punch you. So, you know, take it upon yourself to point these things out and point out that your actions can be distracting and will distract you from shining your light. 1 Peter 2 and 9, we are a peculiar people, but we do not have to go out of our way to be odd. When raising men to serve the Lord, rarely do we do this alone. Children, obey your parents and the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. Honor your father and your mother. Show respect for both of them. Teach your children to respect your wives. If a son does not respect his mother, rarely will he respect his wife. For single men that are looking to marry, I cannot be more serious in this next section. Choose a woman that will be a godly helper for you and a godly mother for your children. Proverbs 18 and 22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Choosing a helper. If you're good with your hands, good at construction or building or remodeling, you can buy a piece of property that has great potential. You can fix it up, you can sell it for a profit, and you can make some good money. When choosing a woman to be your wife and the mother of your children, don't look for a fixer-upper. You train a pet. You train a dog. You don't train a spouse. Marry who they are and not what you want them to be. You're not going to remodel them. Proverbs 21 and 9, better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than in the house shared with a contentious woman. 19, better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Sometimes we find humor in these verses. Do yourself a favor and don't ever laugh at them again. When you see a man that's made an unfortunate choice, when you see a family in chaos, parents that are far from being on the same page, children that are playing their parents against each other, when you witness the family foundation crumble, it is devastating. The rest of their life can be a struggle uphill. Ephesians 5 and 25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. Christ gave us an example. Be an example to your sons. Show him how to love, protect, and provide for a wife. Show your daughters what to expect in a husband. How do you want your daughters to be treated? Teach your sons that he is expected by God to be a provider. If anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. A responsibility to provide and to protect in the seriousness of this expectation. But we quickly jump to Proverbs 31. There's nothing wrong with a woman working. Well, that's true. But in Titus 2 and 5, New King James talks about a homemaker. King James talks about a keeper at home. ESV talks about working at home. The wife and mother can work, but they have responsibilities at home. And the Lord said, it is not good the man should be alone. I will make a helper comparable to him, a helper that's right for him, a helper that is suitable for him. Eve was made to be a helper, not the provider. The world would tell us that families, they can't make it on one income. Well, I've seen this proven wrong. The first thing, realize your income and live within your income. Understand the meaning of delayed gratification. Have the discipline to show the difference between wants and needs. Godly men provide for their families. My time's up. Oh, boy. Fathers, teach your sons to work. Do things heartedly. If you don't work, you don't eat. The lazy man desires, but the diligent will be rich. The borrower is a servant to the lender. Teach these things to your son. Teach them good ethics. You teach them good ethics, and guess what? They're a lot more employable. Work with them. Every one of my kids were working by the age of 16 and prior to that, having responsibilities and wages. To date myself, I mowed yards before I could drive. And I remember walking to the gas station with a gallon can and a quarter, and I could fill that can up. When visiting others or helping others, take your son with you if it's appropriate. Young boys get dirty. They dig holes and they build forts. They take things apart and see how they work, and they see if they can put them back together. They explore and ask more questions that you want to answer. Ask more questions than what you want to answer. Don't suppress this. Don't squash this. This develops their problem-solving skills. Dad, I want to work with you on this project. Let them experience the success of accomplishment. Men need to have problem-solving skills because they're going to have problems. They need a fighting spirit so they don't give up. Teach them to look for answers and for good counsel. Teach your sons to be a fighter like Paul. Teach them to be like David, a man after God's own heart. Be strong and very courageous like Joshua. Be respectful and appreciative, assertive and not aggressive, passionate but not apathetic. Raise the bar of expectations. Choose wisely. Provide and protect. Be responsible. Be self-disciplined. Put childish things away and grow up. Fathers, be an example to your sons. Drop a lot of seed. Pray for the water. Watch them grow, and thank God. Appreciate your time.